Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, February 5th, 2018. South Sudan recalls its ambassador to the United States.
We have deliberated for the last 2 days and we have decided to call our ambassador from Washington. Garangding has been called to Juba. They know the meaning diplomatically.
And South Sudan's former army chief says he will not return to Juba.
Why should I go to Juba in all these issues? Once they called me to come back, they put me under, I was arrested. Should I go to Juba again to be arrested?
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. But we first go to Addis Ababa, where various South Sudan stakeholders started meeting today to kick off the second phase of the high-level revitalization forum. Reports from Addis Ababa say the first morning had some hiccups. We now go live to Addis Ababa with Ali Verji, a fellow at the U.S. Institute of Peace. Ali, are you there?
Yes. Hello, John.
Yes. Can you tell us, you're in Addis Ababa, what is happening there?
Well, the first day is about to conclude of the second phase of the revitalization forum. As you said, there have been some hiccups already. Let's start with the good news. The good news is that there was a united front from the region and the international community that there needs to be meaningful progress in this round and that the parties are here to resolve the underlying problems. The bad news is, or you could say the reality is, that the South Sudanese, whether the government or the opposition or the other groups, have heard these messages before. And so it remains to be seen whether they are genuinely committed to actually using this opportunity meaningfully to resolve the problems that divide the parties.
You've been following this process keenly and you have written extensively about it. What is your take on its future, its outcome? Is it going to deliver?
It's hard to say. Let's look at what happened today. One of the old games that was played in the 2014-2015 talks was again played today, where the government said, we're not participating unless we have more delegates. And so the talks did not kick off exactly as planned, and there were some negotiations that had to happen between the mediation and the government delegation and then between other South Sudanese who were party to the talks to convince the government to participate. And ultimately, the number of government delegates was increased. And this is flexing muscles from the government. It's not necessarily that they actually need more people to be present in the room. The technical experts that they have, that they're able to consult them from wherever they might be. So we have to see whether there is a genuine desire. The government, as we know, is in a militarily dominant position at the moment. So what are their incentives to compromise? And that remains to be seen, whether there's a genuine commitment.
And talking about genuine commitment, is there a political will from the armed and the unarmed groups who are sitting right now in Addis Ababa?
Unfortunately, the big layoff between the cessation of hostilities agreement that was reached in December and the resumption of talks now makes that difficult to answer. If there was momentum generated in December, it's long since gone. 5 or 6 weeks have gone by. There have been, as you know, cessation of hostilities violations. And so we have to see now whether the opposition groups are also committed. I suspect that their position will largely depend on how receptive, how open the government is. And so, in a way, one is reacting to the other. Even though there isn't a united front amongst the opposition, they are collectively much weaker than the government, and so they will be very much hoping or expecting the government to make the bigger overture towards peace than themselves before they reciprocate.
Ali Verji, thank you very much for giving us a taste of what is happening in Addis Ababa. That's Ali Verji, a visiting fellow at the U.S. Institute of Peace. He was speaking to us from the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa. South Sudan recalled its ambassador to the United States on Friday after the Trump administration imposed arms restriction on the country. First Vice President Taban Dengai says the unilateral move by U.S. will affect relationship between Juba and Washington. For VOA News, Gift Friday reports from Juba.
We have deliberated for the last 2 days and we have decided to call our ambassador from Washington. Gerang Ding has been called to Juba. They know the meaning diplomatically.
That is First Vice President Taban Dengai speaking in Juba yesterday at the closing of an event at Juba National Stadium marking South Sudan's National Unity Day. Guy says the U.S. arms restrictions came as a surprise, just as government delegation was preparing to attend the second phase of the high-level revitalization forum talks which got underway in Addis Ababa today. Foreign Affairs Ministry spokesman Mawen Makol-Arik confirmed Ambassador Ding was recalled last Friday but downplayed the significance of the move.
It is just for administrative issue. What we do in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, if there is anything concerning administration, the ambassador is summoned, come, we ask some questions regarding administration, and then go back. This is the final call. It's just to come and consult with us.
Guy criticized the U.S. government for imposing arms restrictions on South Sudan, saying such a decision will weaken the government and embolden the armed opposition.
We shall not collapse because of their sanction, because our friends are there. Americans wanted to impose this arms embargo through the U.N., but it is because Russia has refused. It is because China has refused. The little dollar, the few dollars we have in South Sudan today, it is from oil. Our partners in oil are Chinese, are not American.
Guy noted China and Russia have veto powers in the UN Security Council and says they will defeat U.S. efforts to impose an international arms embargo on South Sudan.
We shall complain to the Chinese and to the Russian. These are the people with veto. And actually the fact that America decided to declare unilateral arm embargo, it is because they have failed in the Security Council, because we have defeated them there. We shall continue to defeat them in the Security Council. They cannot bully the whole Africa.
Guy says he doubts IGAD will implement sanctions on South Sudan government because South Sudan is a member of the regional body. He calls China South Sudan's true friend.
It is the Chinese that will build the roads of South Sudan, not America, because they are not our partners in our economy. The partners are Chinese. The other potential partners are Russian, and Russian are building a refinery, the first refinery in South Sudan.
Guy says the Chinese and the Russians are the ones who have been defending South Sudan and will continue to stand with South Sudan during what he calls our difficulties. For VOA News, I'm Gift Friday in Juba.
South Sudanese political analyst says the country's leaders must compromise in the second and final round of the high-level revitalization forum, which kicked off in the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa, today. The analysts say recent developments show the international community is speaking with one voice to pressure the warring parties to end violence in the country. Nabil Biagio has more for VOA from Juba.
Abraham Awalich, a senior policy analyst at the Juba-based SED Institute, says the European Union's targeted sanctions and the U.S. arms restrictions announced on the same day last week are meant to put pressure on the government to make peace with the opposition.
Since the ceasefire mechanism broke down in 2016, the government has gained a lot of ground and the opposition has weakened. And so you don't have enough pressure internally to get the government to do things. So international community has to come in with the pressure to try to tilt the balance and to create an environment where the government would be willing to accept and to negotiate in good faith.
Juba University political science professor James Okuk says the announcement of targeted sanctions and arms restrictions were timely.
It is when the parties are already getting into their planes and they have gotten their ticket from IGAD, and they are moving to Addis Ababa to start talking in one room. If the parties compromise, as I said, then that pressure will be reduced. Then they will focus on how to implement the revitalized agreement in a successful manner. But if it fails, then they go to the next step is just to implement the sanction.
Okuk says the U.S. arms restrictions on South Sudan will ramp up pressure on the government.
It is effective in that, especially on the side of the government that use more heavy arm than the opposition, the government will be paralyzed to pursue war without those heavy arms at its side, including the tanks and all this. They will never come to South Sudan. And once the government remain with the small arms, it's very difficult for them to defeat the opposition.
U.S. Ambassador to the UN Nikki Haley proposed an arms embargo on South Sudan after visiting South Sudan and meeting with President Salva Kiir in October. Ambassador Haley told the UN Security Council if the leaders of South Sudan failed to compromise in the second round of the high-level revitalization forum, the council should find a way to work with regional partners to bring peace to South Sudan. The U.S. diplomat called on the African Union to consider accountability measures against those who obstruct peace in South Sudan. A short time later, AU Chairman Moussa Faki Mohamed said at the opening of the 30th summit of the African Union, the time has come to sanction those who are blocking peace in South Sudan. South Sudan's Cabinet Affairs Minister, Martin Ilia Lamourou, told reporters in Juba a few days ago after meeting with the IGAD Council of Ministers that the regional body will impose individual sanctions on South Sudanese leaders if peace is not achieved. Awalich says the international community can also use moral persuasion on the warring parties.
You have to persuade people morally that what they are doing is wrong. And I think sometimes it is underestimated, but it could work. And in this case, the people that should be morally appealed to is the government. Is to say that government, you are in charge of the security of citizens. You haven't done it very well. People are displaced. And you have a lot of armed groups against your system.
In any case, Okuk says, the leaders in South Sudan must understand that it is their last chance to bring peace to the country through negotiations.
Now that the international community and the region have decided to side with the people of South Sudan against the leaders of South Sudan, they are getting isolated now. So the moment they don't quickly reconsider their position and compromise on the revitalized agreement as soon as possible without delay beyond this February, then they will face it very tough, and some of them will regret the humiliation that they will get from the region and the international community.
Phase 2 of the High-Level Revitalization Forum is expected to last 13 days. Rebel leader Riek Machar is not in attendance at the talks, but SPLM-IO representatives are there. Machar has been held under house arrest in South Africa for several months. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biadru in Juba.
South Sudan's former army chief of staff says he will not return to South Sudan after completing his medical examinations in Nairobi. General Paul Malong says his friendship with President Kiir ended when the president arrested him for 7 months. Malong says he wants to remain outside South Sudan to take care of his family. He also denies involvement in an audio recordings released by the government in which Malong was allegedly instructing army officers to attack Juba.
No, it is not true. It is not true because President Salva had the same recorded voice that has been asked whether you have let the nation down. Is it true? He said yes. How many bottles do you take for a day? He said, I cannot tell you. Then your government is full of drunkards. X and Y are drunkards. I have never heard about that. Now I have formed the committee to investigate. What is this? Where we recorded? And he was not the one. I believe he was not the one.
So you're telling me that the recordings that were out there is an imitation of your voice?
Totally. They just did it for the sake of doing it because those attackers were in the bush. They revealed of their own and they were in the bush. We were discussing it, all of us, when I was in Juba. Somebody called Chan and revealed because he was to be arrested and information was leaked to him. And he went to the bush. Somebody called Agwer, a major, also was to be arrested. The information was leaked to him and he went to the bush. I was in Juba. I was not told that these people are your people. I would have asked them whether if they are my people, they have to come back. When they went to the bush, they went and declared themselves that they belong to Riek Machar. They belong to IO.
And so what is your move now? You left Juba and you've been quiet, but a lot has been said about you. Some people are saying you want to join the opposition alliance. Others are saying You are busy recruiting people in Northern Bahrain. What are you doing?
First of all, I'm not in Northern Bahrain right now. The second, I'm not with the opposition. Opposition are now in Addis. I'm not in Addis. If I'm among them, I should be there.
On Friday, the European Union issued a statement sanctioning you, Information Minister Michael Makuei, and then another general in the South Sudan Army. US did it, Canada did it, and then now EU are doing it. How do you feel about it?
How should I know? How should I know why are they sanctioning me? Because they are sanctioning Michael Makuei, because Michael Makuei is in the government. But it is there to say it. Why have they sanctioned me? Because I'm at home. I was arrested by the government. And the government has released me to come for medical checkup and then to come and see my family.
And when are you returning to Juba?
Why should I go to Juba in all these issues? When they call me to come back, they put me under house arrest. Should I go to Juba again to be arrested?
So you're telling me you're not going back to South Sudan. Is that what I'm getting from you?
What do I have in that place now? I'm not working.
You have a house, you have properties there, you have children, you have your family there.
Yes, my family are there. Some of my family are here. But I'm denied to be liberal when I go there. Why should I go to where I will be arrested?
You were released to go for medical checkup. Why would they arrest you again?
You just ask them when what I came back from you, I was arrested. Why I was being arrested?
You and Salva have been very close. What went wrong?
Huh?
You and Salva Kiir have been close friends. What went wrong?
Our friendship started when President Salva was not a president by then. And today, we are not equal. He's a president. I'm an ordinary person. You cannot force somebody to be your friend.
So your friendship,
yes.
Your friendship with him is no longer like before. Is that what you're telling me?
Well, you see, we are not friends. We are not friends right now because I'm being... In house arrest with no charges for 7 months.
But he released you to go for medical checkup. He let you go.
So after seven months, if you are put under your house arrest 7 months without charges, will you feel that is a friendship?
And so just a final question here. A lot of people are asking, what is Malong up to? There's a lot in the air.
Malong is in his house.
Doing what?
He's staying with my family.
And
do
so
I have a training center in my house?
That's not what I'm saying, but people are saying you are busy.
Busy doing what?
Tell us more.
I have nothing. If you know anything, just ask me specifically that you are doing this.
That's General Paul Malong, former head of the South Sudan Army. He was speaking to me from an undisclosed location in East Africa earlier today. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a leader of an opposition party is pushing for formation of a temporary government to prepare for elections in South Sudan. Find out more after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today...
What do you think is most important to live a good life?
You need to work hard, yeah, because, you know, when God helps, you also have to do your part and work hard. And also friends are a big thing in your life as it goes on. So friends who are loyal, God, and hard work bring out the best in a person.
Stay happily. You don't have any regrets. You live in every moment you live.
To live a good life, one, you must be simple and humble. Okay? Two, you must be honest so that people can love you.
Good life I am seeing is having a free life, a life without enemies. Secondly, a simple life, a life not life of bragging, a life of saying I am this and this. No. Lastly, life of holiness also.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. An opposition politician says general elections is the only way to resolve the conflict and end political instability in South Sudan. The head of the Republican Party of South Sudan is urging the international community to force South Sudan's warring parties to establish an 18-month interim administration to pave way for national elections. Manyang David Mayar has this report for VOA from Juba.
Republican Party chairman Lewis Anei, who is also a former Werribee State governor, says he does not believe the current round of talks will deliver sustainable peace and stability in South Sudan because the warring parties will likely violate any agreement they sign in Addis, just as they have in the past. And he says the only way to move forward is holding credible elections.
Whether they will choose to retain the very guys that that have mishandled them right now, that will be their choice. Or if they can gather their strength and morale to resist all the guns and bring a peaceful party that has a program and try that party again, then that is their choice. So we want elections to be given a chance on the table.
Some say it is impossible to hold credible elections in the face of insecurity and violence in parts of the country. And he says an 18-month transitional government should be formed to handle national elections.
In this, the international community should really continue to come in to assist that kind of a government in that provisional period of 18 months in a heavy way so as to help the government to organize quick elections as the only way to bring a good government to people of South Sudan.
And he says the never-ending AGAD mediated talks only prolong the suffering of the South Sudanese people and prolong a government which he says has lost constitutional legitimacy. And he says it is time regional bloc AGAD and the international community form a government that keeps soldiers in the barracks and promotes democracy.
If this agreement or these talks end up in an agreement that can produce a government that has nothing to do with the guns and it is reinforced regionally and internationally, then there will be people of South Sudan to support this kind of a system that is not dependent on the gun.
Aside from pushing for elections as the solution to bring about peace in the country, Anaya advises South Sudanese to stay away from tribal-based politics in order to ensure long-lasting peace in the country. He says the Gen Council of Elders, of which he once served as Secretary General, has deviated from its original objectives.
I had wanted Gen Council of Elders to devote much of its time to the development of the culture of the Dinka people and then as a contribution to the development of our identity as people of South Sudan. But then when I found that we have become more of a government than a cultural kind of a thing, I thought I should really come out. If it has become so divisive, I better do another thing which can bring our people together.
Anay and his colleagues were former SPLM members before they broke away and formed the Republican Party of South Sudan in February 2017. Anay says they left because there was no democracy in the SPLM party.
There is only what is called guided democracy, in which if it is not the will of the leader of the party, then you have no headway. There is no freedom. There is no democracy in the SPLM. The leadership of the party, of the SPLM, rejected the idea of secret ballot so that people are able to express themselves in a confidential way.
And he says by forming his own party, he liberated himself from the dictatorship of the SPLM party, and once national elections are organized, he will be free to contest the ruling party's leader. For VOA News, Amanyang David Mayar, reporting from Juba.
15 soldiers who escaped from Juba in July 2016 with rebel leader Riek Machar have returned to South Sudan after switching alliance to first Vice President Taban Deng Gai. A spokesman for Taban Deng Gai says an SPLA cantonment site in Equatoria has been set up for this group. Manyang David Mayar has more on that story for VOA from Juba.
The former rebels say they are adhering to the call for peace. Lieutenant Colonel Saddam Parmanyang, the leader of the returning soldiers, says more soldiers will be heading home.
Coming to Juba right now, and there was many people on the way, should come because peace is very important. Not peace should be delegated with another country, except those of the citizens of the nation should be build their own peace.
Dressed in civilian clothes, Par says hundreds of soldiers agreed to return to Juba, But when the plane arrived in Goma, in the Democratic Republic of Congo, the others declined to get on board. Ambassador Agnes Oswa, Director for Human Rights, Gender and Child and Social Welfare in South Sudan's Foreign Affairs Ministry, welcomed the former rebels in Juba on behalf of the government.
We are so delighted to receive our returnees from the Democratic Republic of Congo. First, I would like to express our appreciation to the United Nations Mission in the Republic of South Sudan for facilitating for us their transportation. So these are the sign of peace. My brothers, you are highly welcome. Feel at home. We receive you wholeheartedly. We encourage those who are still fighting to lay down their arms and let's build our nation.
UNMISS spokesperson Francisca Moore denies the peacekeeping mission was responsible for transporting the former rebels to Juba. In an email response, Moore said the return of SPLM-IO members from Goma was managed by the United Nations Organization Stabilization Mission in the Democratic Republic of Congo, or MONUSCO, in direct liaison with the government of South Sudan. MONUSCO spokesperson Florence Marshall confirmed to South Sudan in Focus via email that her organization transferred by plane 15 SPLM-IO elements from Goma to Juba on Friday. Marshall says the 15 former rebels are part of the larger groups of SPLM-IO fighters who have been hosted in MONUSCO's camp near Goma on humanitarian grounds since August 2016. She says all the former fighters were disarmed before being transferred to the camp. Some 350 SPLM-IO fighters are still in the camp, according to Marshall, while 280 others have left the camp for Kenya, Ethiopia, Sudan, and some have even traveled to the U.S. Marshall says MONUSCO continues to hold consultations with embassies to, in her own words, identify solutions for the remaining elements. SPLA-IO Guy faction spokesman Agel Machar says his group has been in touch with Machar's former bodyguards.
They have responded to the call for peace. There were supposed to be more, and more are still coming. So we have received them and we have taken them to the containment sites that we have here in Jubek State. They will go through the screening and the processes, the normal process of integration that has been outlined in the peace agreement.
Other SPLA-IO rebels say Guy is not their leader, insisting that Riek Machar remains the only legitimate leader of the opposition. Machar has been held for several months under house arrest in South Africa, where he landed after fleeing South Sudan in July 2016. Guy's spokesman says Riek Machar no longer leads the armed group.
The threat was brought by the leadership of the movement, and the leadership of the movement sat and brought Thabang Dene Guy. So those who want to pursue Dr. Riek at a personal level, they can continue to do so. But our advice to them is that if you belong to SPLM-IO, the leader of SPLM-IO now is Comrade Thabang Dene Guy, and he's implementing peace with Comrade Salva, the President of the Republic. And the best thing for them to do is to report to the nearest containment sites.
South Sudan in Focus was unable to reach SPLM-IO Deputy Military Spokesman Lam Paul Gabriel for comment on this story, as all of his mobile phones were switched off. For VOA News, Amanyang David Mayar, reporting from Juba.
That's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song Take My Love, It Is Free by Yvonne Chaka Chaka. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being here. We'd like to know what you think about this show. Our email is southsudan@voanews.com. You can also find us on Facebook. Our Facebook name is South Sudan in Focus. We'll be waiting for you right here tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.